Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
So here we are, after months of courtroom fireworks, after wiretaps, tears, and verdicts that landed like thunder. Guess what?
The Adelson family story moves into the quietest chapter of all, the appellate phase.
No cameras, no juries, no spontaneous gasps from the gallery or Donna herself. It's paper, cold, dry, legal paper, the kind that can take years to move, and almost nothing changes the ending. On November 4th of 2025, Donna Adelson, matriarch, mastermind, and now affectionately known as inmate number L23281, at the Florida Department of Corrections, filed her notice of appeal. One day later, her son Charlie Adelson, like mother, like son, submitted his reply brief, closing out the final word in his own appellate process. For the first time since the murder of Dan Markell in 2014, both mother and son are in the exact same legal posture. Convicted killers trying to convince a state that the system got it wrong. Sounds dramatic, right? Notice of appeal, reply brief, First District Court of Appeal. But in reality, it's paperwork. It is procedural. It's the sound of a train rolling down tracks. It almost always ends in the same place. Affirmation. And before we continue into this, some of your thoughts on how this, you think this will go in the comment section on YouTube. I'd love to see it. And we'll reply back to you, too. I'm curious. We do read them, by the way. And as you see, we reply back to a lot of them. So please do give me your thoughts there. And hit subscribe on YouTube while you're at it, if you haven't already done that. If you're watching us on the or listening to us on the podcast platforms, hit subscribe there, and please do check us out on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Let's talk about what actually happens next, because this is where most people, even seasoned court watchers, get kind of lost. When you file a notice of appeal in Florida, you're not asking for a redo. You're basically telling the appellate court, hey, we think the trial judge made a reversible legal error. You're not allowed to bring new witnesses or new evidence. You can't say, but we found a new theory. None of that matters. The appellate court doesn't care if you're innocent or if you've had a spiritual awakening or if you think your attorney blew it. The only question is, did the trial follow the law? If yes, you stay where you are. If no, they might, and might is the key word, send it back for a do-over on a narrow point. Donna's attorneys, yeah, Jackie's still there, Tom Petty, now have to wait for a trial record. Every transcript, exhibit, motion, and piece of testimony to be transferred from the Leon County Clerk's Office to the First District Court of Appeal in Tallahassee. That transfer triggers the briefing schedule. Then comes the big job, the initial brief. This is their chance to frame the whole case for the appellate judges. They'll comb through thousands of pages looking for anything. That's why trials are as meticulous and sometimes boring as they can be. That's why you have sidebars and things stop every now and then, because the referee, the judge, is making sure that when this step happens, and it always does in every case where someone is found guilty, they don't have anything to go back on and say, see, you screwed up. Good judges don't have a lot of problems with this. Bad ones do. They're going to come through thousands of pages looking for anything. A misstep in jury instructions, a ruling that allowed in prejudicial evidence, an objection overruled that maybe should have been sustained. This is needle in a haystack work. And in a trial this cleanly prosecuted, where so much of the incriminating evidence came from Donna's own mouth, those needles are scarce. Keep in mind, too, they were asking for a different judge prior to this trial starting several times over. Denied every time. They're going to use that. That was strategy. Didn't necessarily think that they would win that argument, but they thought, if it's on the record then that we're asking for a new judge, and if maybe we can find that needle in a haystack, that may be enough for an appellate court to say, okay. They were trying to stack the deck in Donna's favor with really bad cards. And sometimes that wins your hand. Sometimes. But they didn't know what the next cards that were going to be drawn showed. Because that trial was coming up after they were complaining about the judge. And the trial came and went, and she was found guilty. And it was a pretty clear-cut trial. So they, again, kind of got bad cards. And now they're sitting there with their hand going, how are we going to play this? That's how it is working right now. Let's be blunt about the odds. In Florida, fewer than 5% of criminal appeals result in any kind of reversal. For first-degree murder convictions, a number is microscopic. Appellate courts aren't built to second-guess juries. They're built to protect process. Unless the judge fundamentally misapplied the law, the conviction stands. Even then, most wins on appeal don't mean freedom. They mean a remand, a partial do-over on a technical issue that almost never changes the ultimate outcome. For Donna, that means the best-case scenario might be shaving a few months off a life sentence that she'll die serving. The worst case, and by far the most likely, is a one-page opinion. Basically says, we read it, no reversible error. Bye-bye. Charlie's in a slightly different place. His appeal's already in motion. His team has filed their reply brief, the last document they're allowed to submit. Now, the first DCA will decide whether to schedule oral arguments. And if they grant it, his lawyers will get about 20 minutes to stand before a three-judge panel and argue why the trial court blew it. Sorry, allergies. The state gets the same time to argue why they did it. Sometimes the judges pepper both sides of the question. Sometimes they sit silent, expressionless, giving nothing away. Then everyone waits. Weeks, months, sometimes a year. If the judges deny oral arguments altogether, that's usually a bad sign. It means they think the issues are obvious and do not need discussion or to waste their time. Either way, once it's submitted, the clock runs until the opinion drops. And when it does, it's almost always the same phrase you've seen before. Affirmed. That's the reality of post-conviction law. A reality no one in the Adelson orbit seems to grasp during trial. For years, the family treated the courtroom like a chessboard. Donna plotting, Charlie spinning, Wendy posturing as the good daughter. But appeals don't reward performance. They reward precision. Cold, procedural precision. You know, like Georgia Kappelman. And neither Donna nor Charlie was ever procedurally good at keeping their emotions from dictating their strategies or their strategy in any of this. Let's pause to talk psychology, because this is where it gets darkly fascinating. For defendants like the Adelsons, filing appeal isn't just legal. It's existential. It gives them a sliver of control in a world that has stripped it away. Inside prison walls, time stops. Outside, the narrative keeps moving on without them. The appeal becomes their only active verb, the illusion that they're still fighting. They're still relevant. Still one brief away from redemption. It's not about winning. It's about not being forgotten. And for a narcissist, that is damn important. And that's where Donna's mindset gets especially tragic. Her conversations in jail, the ones recorded and played in court, painted a woman obsessed with image, reputation, and the idea of being misunderstood. She talked about protecting the grandchildren and keeping the family together, even as those same words condemned her. Her appeal will likely mirror the same self-narrative, that she didn't intend to murder, that things went too far, that she's been unfairly vilified, but the law doesn't weigh intent the way morality does. Once you hire someone to commit a crime that results in death, the road back to innocence is, well, it's kind of gone. Charlie's legal path is equally narrow. His convictions rested on wiretap evidence, so damning that even seasoned defense attorneys struggled to spin it. The recordings between him and Catherine McBenoit weren't ambiguous. They were linguistic equivalents of fingerprints. They were precise. They were detailed and impossible to scrub away. His lawyers argued entrapment, overreach, and improper admission of statements. None of it stuck. On appeal, they'll recycle some of those claims and dress them up as errors of law or abuse of discretion. But appellate courts don't overturn verdicts because the evidence was ugly. They overturn when the rules of the game weren't followed. And in Charlie's trial, Judge Cooper ran a tight ship. So what does success even look like for the Adelsons? Realistically, there are only three outcomes here. Let's go through them, shall we? Number one, the appeals are denied outright. A near certain result. The conviction stand and the case is effectively over, except for post-conviction motions years down the line. Two, a partial reversal, something minor like a sentencing correction or an issue with restitution or court costs. It doesn't free them, but it gives the lawyers a headline. Three, a long shot miracle, a full reversal and remand for a new trial. For that to happen, there need to be a smoking gun procedural error, like an improper exclusion of key defense evidence or juror misconduct, and there is no sign of either. When those doors close, the next step is federal habeas corpus, a last-ditch appeal claiming constitutional violations, and that process can take another 5 to 10 years. You think Donna's got 5 to 10 left in her? I don't. It rarely ends well. Federal judges are even more reluctant to meddle in state murder cases, especially ones that already survive multiple layers of review. But again, for the Adelsons, the point isn't just winning. It's delay, it's motions, it's keep the illusion alive, keep this party going. And while all this is happening, life goes on outside. The Markell family continues to heal quietly, privately, while the system that failed Dan for years finally holds his killers accountable. His sons, the real innocents in this story, are growing up learning the truth piece by piece from what they're able to see from behind the Adelson curtain of Wendy. Every denied appeal brings a small measure of performance to their father's justice. Every filing from Donna and Charlie reopens an old wound, but also reminds the world why these convictions mattered in the first place. It's worth remembering, appellate courts are not emotional places. They don't care about tragedy or catharsis. They care about procedure. Three judges, a panel of law clerks, and a stack of briefs thicker than a dictionary. No cameras, no closing arguments, just footnotes and citations. The very machinery that the Adelsons once thought they could manipulate now grinds on without them, indifferent to their charm or pedigree. That's an irony. That's poetic, even. For years, the Adelsons used lawyers and money to bend systems, delay accountability, hide behind privilege. Now, they're trapped inside a system that cannot be bent, cannot be hurried, and does not care who they are. In the appellate world, everyone's just a name on a docket. and that docket is moving forward slowly, relentlessly. The record will be tarnished. The briefs are going to be filed. The opinions will be issued. And the most likely ending, the statistically inevitable one, is that, well, nothing is likely going to change. But there's more billable hours on the way. But still, they're going to wait. Donna is in the state prison cell, making or marking off days like, you know, rosary beads, basically. Okay. Charlie, pacing in a different unit, getting his toe stubbed, still trying to charm people into believing he's been wronged, both clinging to a hope that the appellate system almost never delivers, the hope that a reversal will undo a lifetime of bad decisions. And it won't. The truth is, the appellate process doesn't rescue the guilty, it just confirms what the jury already knew. Double whammy. And so the Adelson saga enters its final act, maybe, unless we see more charges. Not with the bang of courtroom drama here, but with the quiet hum of paperwork and time. Two convicted murderers, one family shattered beyond repair, and a justice system slowly, methodically sealing the story shut. In the end, that's what justice looks like. It's not fast, it's not flashy, but it is final. And the Adelsons have to learn that sometimes the book ends and it may not be the fairy tale conclusion that they wanted. Your thoughts in that comment section on YouTube. Do you think they got a chance in hell on appeal? Love to hear it. Search Hidden Killers of Tony Bruschi on YouTube if you're not already there to find us. And please hit subscribe while you're at it. We really, really would appreciate that. And really, really looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening as well. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.